This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, three stand out, which help support gastric health and offer digestive support. GI Guard AM, GI Guard PM, and Peppermint Oil GI. Numerous clinical studies have demonstrated that these products can help to support GI health and promote gastric comfort. They help maintain the integrity of the stomach lining and its proper immune responses to the typically harsh gastric environment. Their ingredients are backed by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. That's drhoffman.com/protocol for life balance. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, something that I very much look forward to because it's an opportunity to field your questions and have a free-form conversation with our nutritionist in residence. She's Layla Mutin. She joins me each week for a timely discussion of the issues as well as answering questions that come to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com. How you doing, Lana?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. Well, you know, just use the occasion since the big health story that's grabbing the headlines and topping the news is still the coronavirus.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I must admit to some ambivalence about the story on this, because on the, you know, we can talk about the good, the bad, and the uncertain as we do, as we have been breaking it down for our listening audience the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Is there are some ominous indications, but there are also some reassuring indications.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that today the stock market halted its decline because of news from China that the number of new cases was declining.
Mm-hmm.
So that it suggests that this epidemic may have reached an inflection point. It was going up seemingly at a logarithmic rate, affecting tens and tens of thousands of people. And that may be a vast underestimate, because I saw pictures from China where, you know, this is typical, I mean, really reflects the political system in totalitarian countries. Is what they've gone from underreacting and sort of quashing the story so as not to instill panic and so as not to reflect badly on local health officials and to uphold the image, the world image of China, you know, lest China be blamed for some sort of worldwide epidemic, to overreacting. So now they seem to be apprehending citizens who are suspected of having this. They are going out in the streets with squads of, you know, masked police officials and army officials who are literally dragging people out of their apartments, you know, and then putting them into isolation camps.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, also pictures of the disarray there and the body bags and the, you know, people having uncontrollable seizures. You know, these are things that are banned because they control the internet very carefully there. But some people have been sort of smuggling out these videos that show, you know, quite a situation of disarray there. So, you know, the suggestion is that the official count is vastly underestimating the true count, that there's a lot of people who are sick that are afraid. They're afraid to go to the hospitals. So they're afraid that they'll be taken away from their families.
Yes, they don't want to be quarantined.
Plus, what worse place to be, even, you know, if you think you have a cold or a flu, maybe you don't have coronavirus, is to go to a place with a lot of people without the coronavirus.
Yeah.
You know, so it's evidently,
so hospitals have become scary places.
And the hospitals are like pop-up hospitals. They take like these vast tracts of land and bulldoze them and then put up these very temporary facilities to take care of thousands and thousands of people. So that's, there's that. There's also the fact that one of the original whistleblowers on this, you know, we throw around the term whistleblower, you know, fairly casually in this country, but here's a whistleblower who paid the price. Hmm. He was out there in front of it. He was Dr. Wen Liang, who early on in December, he was saying, there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's an emerging epidemic here, and we better get a handle on this before it becomes a wildfire.
Wow.
And the initial reaction of the Chinese officials was, could you please come and see us? And after interrogation, he was forced to read a statement like, you know, like a hostage video kind of thing.
Oh my.
Where he recanted. But because he was a dedicated doctor on the front lines, he caught coronavirus.
Oh.
And he died. Now, in the worst case, conspiracy theories, they offed him because he did not really fit the pattern of the typical person who succumbs to this, is that it's the old, the young, very young, the
weakened,
debilitated,
immunity.
Weakened people. And he was a doctor in his 30s, you know, a young physician. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can think the worst of it, but now they've, in retrospect, they made him a national hero, you know, that he was, you know, they sort of completely reformed the story about him, that first he was, you know, a traitor to the party and to the people of China, and now he's like a national hero because he gave his life in the
Wow.
So there's that. That's kind of disconcerting.
Because he said,
He called it. It turns out correctly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't a Cassandra or an alarmist, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. There really was something going on. And there was a delay, which now, I mean, the Chinese people, as much as their censorship and it's difficult to, you know, have dissenting ideas, there's a lot of
controlled internet
pushback against the government there and the government's handling of this. The other thing they're doing, it's kind of crazy, is they're having these trucks that go down these main streets. The streets are now deserted, spraying something in the air.
Uh-oh.
And it appears to be like, you know, not DDT or, you know.
Lithium?
It's like diluted bleach.
Oh.
You know, and these clouds of
which
probably isn't that great to breathe, but there's nobody on the streets anymore. But it won't
That'll
do anything.
Burn
it won't
your lungs.
It won't do anything.
Oh,
it's one thing to take, okay, you know, somebody who's been in a room, you know, where they have the coronavirus and you swab down. The other thing that's disconcerting is there's cruise ships. And man, is there anything worse than being quarantined on a ship and knowing that a bunch of people, like several dozen people have come down with us? There's a ship in Yokohama Harbor in Japan, where apparently they had some Chinese tourists, and the Chinese tourists had it. Now, you know, like
you always hear about a norovirus outbreak on a cruise line at some point every couple of years.
It's a contained environment. You know, the people who are really sick, they're taking off. The rest, they're quarantined because it's like a natural quarantine on the ship. But man, you know, what the waiting game. Another concern is that they actually found a person who they let go. I think it was from a ship or a plane. Might have been a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, you're fine. You test negative. And then the person ended up testing positive, which suggests
incubation period is longer.
That incubation period is longer. That also the testing can sometimes miss some people, and those people can get out into the larger world.
Oh, that's concerning.
That's concerning.
Yeah.
And then there's also cases where they can't seem to trace how the people got it. It's one thing if you could say, this is the index case. Patient A gave it to individuals B, C, D, and then they transmitted it. They actually have some cases where they have no idea how the people might have caught it.
Wow.
You know, that there's some remote relationship to somebody in Wuhan province, but it's unclear how these people got it. So that's a little bit of a concern. Nonetheless, the signs are encouraging because the number of cases, say, I don't think there's a single case in New York City right now. There was somebody under observation and they turned out negative.
Right. Okay.
Yep. There's like maybe less than 10 cases or maybe a dozen cases across the entire United States.
Yeah.
They are all in isolation. Their contacts have been interviewed and surveyed and surveilled. And I think that the healthcare systems of major advanced countries are doing a bang-up job on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a real detective kind of thing. And they're keeping a lid on this. The concern is, you know, less organized countries. North Korea's answer is they admit they don't have the kind of health infrastructure that they would need to contain this. It would go like wildfire. They just closed the borders completely. Mm-hmm. No Chinese coming back and forth. Complete isolation.
Wow.
And so they have had, who knows what's really going on there, zero cases. There's a lot of commerce.
There's a lot of commerce being cut off
between China and North Korea. There's
more starvation, more malnutrition, more those problems.
Their economy will suffer more because they're very dependent on China.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's also the question that I answered on my radio show is, could supplement ingredients from China carry this? I mean, look, let's face it, not only supplement ingredients, but pharmaceutical ingredients come from China. They're cheap. They're manufactured there. There have been cases where the pharmaceutical ingredients have been contaminated due to the Chinese manufacturing process. There mm-hmm. was a very well-publicized case that killed people with heparin that was adulterated from China, the heparin ingredient. And recently, Zantac was implicated in this. I think the ingredient came from China. It was some carcinogenic components. Over-the-counter Zantac, you know, the acid.
Over-the-counter Zantac. Turnover package and see made in China?
Well, there's no disclosure. You have no way of knowing
right.
what goes into that. You know.
Right.
But the supply chains are such that, mm-hmm. like parts for your iPhone, parts mm-hmm. are, you know, coming from China.
Yeah.
So the point being, could supplements create a problem? The U.S. Customs and Enforcement, along with CDC, issued a joint statement saying that there is no evidence that stuff from China mm-hmm. carries it, that inanimate objects from China.
Okay.
Now, people can be carrying, but, you know, don't order, you know, bat parts from China, you know, for your favorite, you know, for your bat soup. You know, I mean, I know it's highly prized for its...
Bat soup?
Aphrodisiac properties or whatever.
Bats, huh?
Anti-aging properties.
Okay.
Avoid the bat soup. The restaurants in Chinatown here in New York are experiencing a 50% drop.
Oh, yeah.
People don't want to go to Chinatown.
Right.
And it's not like Chinatown. It's, yes, there are Chinese people.
Yes.
Not all Chinese people have coronavirus. But
that's true.
There is.
I think they're concerned about the imports of food and so forth, and seasoning, spices, all of that kind of thing.
I mean, it's kind of a natural. I mean, look, it's frankly, it's racist,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's a natural way that humans organize their brain. If somebody who is, you know, black or brown or yellow or a skinhead, you know, coughs on you and makes you sick, or you know, mugs you,
mm-hmm.
you will be wary of that whole category of people because that goes back to the way that we survived, you know, in prehistoric times.
True.
As you'd say, you know.
Looks like that.
Wait, gotta stay away from those Neanderthals.
Right.
They are bad
news. Cro-Magnons gotta stick together and stay away from those Neanderthals.
Cro-Magnon power.
Oh my gosh.
Are you a Cro-Magnon supremacist?
Right.
But seriously, so that's how it is. Mm. So in terms of a cure, there is no cure. Another thing that's kind of weird and is that in China, if you're rich, you can buy medicine.
Mm.
And, you know, they say, well, it's socialized medicine. Yeah, at a very rudimentary level, it's socialized medicine. You get, you know, like put into, they give you a cot and a blanket, you know.
Right.
But.
The doctor only makes $23,000 a year.
If you are well off, which could be a good salary for over there.
Sure.
But if you are well off there, you are hunting the black market mm-hmm. for AIDS drugs, which have not been proven to work, but there's some plausibility potentially. And you're going to buy this against the possibility that your family might get the coronavirus. So that's what wealthy people in Beijing and Shanghai and
then you can buy
Hong
a kidney.
Kong. You know, there are more millionaires in China than there are in in the United States.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. So
there's a lot of people. There's more people in China.
And there's some prosperity. I mean, admittedly, they're very much the 1%, but those people are buying medication on the black market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by hook or crook, they're obtaining it.
Yeah. Just like you could buy a kidney on the black market and
yeah.
a child and
oh, yeah.
golly.
And also the other thing is there's this weird animal that kind of looks like an armadillo that is also thought to be part of the chain of transmission of this.
Oh, really?
And it's also one of these exotic animals that's highly prized for its...
Is it native to China?
It's like a scaly anteater.
Huh.
And it's thought to be... it's thought to be it one of the vectors of this. And it's one of those animals that's available in those wild markets where, you know, people buy exotic delicacies.
Oh, so this is an animal that would also be consumed.
Yes.
Interesting. Interesting. So that could be something as well.
So it is called a pangolin. Have you ever heard of a pangolin?
No.
It is the weirdest looking animal. It looks like something out of... at prehistoric times, the pangolin.
Wow.
But it's an endangered species. Look at it.
Wow. Wow. That's Dr. Hoffman showing me a picture of that
of
on his
pangolin.
iPad.
Of a pangolin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scaly anteater. And it is the most trafficked mammal in the world.
Oh,
pangolins
no.
are in high demand in countries like China and Vietnam. Their meat is considered a delicacy. And pangolin scales are used in traditional medicine folk remedies.
Oh, wow.
There is still growing international illegal trade in pangolins. And the pangolins, it turns out, can harbor a coronavirus with 99% similarity to the current coronavirus.
So are they factory farming the pangolins, possibly?
No,
they're
I don't
farming
think so.
The and
I think
things
they're
are
wild
starting to
pangolins.
Happen. Wow. That's
yeah.
really something.
So,
well, apropos of this, we have a question, Dr. Hoffman, from Nancy. She's concerned about an upcoming trip to Japan in mid-March. Because the coronavirus seems to get worse every day, what would you do? It's a 12-hour trip, and I don't want to be detained over there, says Nancy. And also, if we do go, any trips on jet lag?
I think the decision is very binary. It's either go or don't go.
Right.
But I actually think that there's very low risk in Japan. They have a very well-organized healthcare system.
Yeah.
They have a close proximity to China, and they have a lot of back and forth with Chinese people coming to Japan. But I think they've locked it down. So I just don't suspect there's going to be a lot of problems. If you're going to Japan, it's less of a problem than if you are, I mean, hypothetically, you're going to Japan, so there's nobody with coronavirus here, so nobody on the plane is going to have it.
Yeah.
When you come back, that could be potentially an issue if this develops into something that is broken through in Japan.
That's true.
And then you would be stuck on a plane, potentially, with someone who is a carrier.
Right.
But the likelihood of that is very small. I would say, you know, go. I definitely would, and I think the government, State Department has suggested this, and a lot of airlines have stopped going to China.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, you got a trip to China, you are up the creek. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have been planning for months and years their lifelong, you know, bucket list trip to China.
Sure.
This is not the time to go to China.
It's not the time to go to China,
unfortunately.
No,
and worst of all, it's, you get a cold here, no problem. You get a cold there, and you're going to be subject to all kinds of surveillance. And you know,
especially lately,
testing and sequestration and so on and so on.
So
often happens when you travel. You know, so it's not the time to be, you know, having the sniffles and a cough when you're traveling.
And a lot of people just getting on an airplane, even if it's a short flight, will wind up with the sniffles and a cold.
Yeah,
so by the time you get there, if you're prone to something that, all the more problems may arise because of it.
Yeah.
Wow. Nancy, wow. Okay. Oh, she wants to know, what would you do about jet lag? Yeah, that's always a tough one going over there.
You know, the suggestion is don't use alcohol.
Right.
Because that messes you up.
Mm-hmm.
Time your light exposure.
Yeah.
So that when you get there, you know, providing that you get there, you know, in the morning, mm-hmm. you know, flashlight in your eyes,
yes.
so to awaken you.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the way we do it when we go to Europe, because mostly I go to Europe, I go to Asia, but you go to Europe mm-hmm. and you arrive in the middle of the night, but there it's dawn, you know,
yeah.
early morning.
Yeah.
And so what you do is you make sure you get outside, or you make sure you get the right kind of light exposure. Try to stay awake
Really, really, really do.
Right. Because that'll put you into the circadian rhythm of the day.
Exactly.
There.
Stay awake and try to stay awake at least until 8:30 p.m. in the time zone that you're in. Take a melatonin and go to bed.
Right.
Or if you're sleepy enough, you won't need that melatonin. Just go to bed.
And, you know, the melatonin that you
take... With any luck, you'll be up by 5, 6 the next
morning. The
melatonin
you take on the way there should be keyed to the bedtime in your destination.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So
I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's the only really thing to do. Yeah, I know when I went to Europe, took a red-eye to Europe, landed there at 9 a.m., you know, stayed awake. I was like a drunk person by the time bedtime came.
That is... My first days in Europe are so crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
But then to get up in their morning, which would be my middle of the night,
right.
and have a cup of coffee, I felt like I was mugged by my adrenals.
And then
what's going on?
You eat about 8 meals, you know, between the time. Because when you're awake,
uh-huh.
you get hungry. Like, one of the ways that I quash appetite is, like, I go to bed. I'm a little hungry. I go to bed.
Yeah, of course.
And I wake up. I'm not hungry.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like 10 hours later.
Right.
You know, it's like... Whoa. And uh-huh. then I can exercise for a couple hours. I'm still not hungry. So the problem is when you're traveling, you're awake a lot. So it's like, you get hungry.
True.
And
sure.
you eat meals out of phase of your circadian rhythm.
Right.
So again, try to eat meals that are in mm-hmm. phase with the time zone. So mm-hmm. go, you know, when you're there, it's breakfast time. Try to eat a breakfast, a little bit of something.
Yeah.
Eat a lunch, eat a dinner. It'll start to put your body back into circadian
exactly.
rhythm.
Exactly. As well as your digestive system and all that kind of thing. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah,
I'm normally asleep now.
No, because what I'll do is I'll go to some country where, you know, they don't even speak English that well. And I'll show up for dinner at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And in many countries, they are not like 24/7 eaters. They have discrete meal times.
Sure.
They don't even serve food sometimes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's like, I'm hungry, you know, because it's my time, you know, in New York.
Right.
It's like, no.
Got to wait till 8.
No.
Or something. Exactly. Wow. Nancy, also, if you're traveling, take a probiotic with you. It's also good for travelers.
Take a probiotic.
Like Dr. O'Hara's probiotic for that, especially should you have any problems with traveler's diarrhea, anything like that. Have it on hand. Start taking it. Take it out.
You know what? And I must give a nod to this. I spoke mm-hmm. to the CEO of Clear yesterday, Nate Jones. And, you know, a good reminder is that when you're on a plane, absolutely use Clear, because Clear will help with your mucus clearing.
Mm-hmm.
The point he made was that one of the reasons why people, there are two reasons why people get sick on planes. One, maybe three. One is there's a lot of germs and they're sort of recirculated.
Mm-hmm.
The other, and you're in a contained environment with, you know, what are the chances somebody's sick? Somebody's mm-hmm. going to be sick, shedding viruses in the environment. But also your nasal passages are exceedingly dry and that kind of neutralizes their defenses.
Yeah, yep.
And number three, possibly, and I threw this in, is there's a lot of chemicals in there and those chemicals have a immune suppressive mm-hmm. effect on you.
Mm-hmm. They say
there's a fatigue and stress factor too. You know?
Right. When you're traveling on a train, you should sip a cup of water every hour. That's a lot.
That's why they keep
that's
trying
a
to.
Cup. They're always coming around with water.
You know what?
It's
not as altruistic as it seems. It's just, oh my God, they're always like giving us something to drink. Mm-hmm. It's so nice of them.
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't want the lawsuits.
Yeah, sure.
They
no,
don't want the liability.
It's very dehydrating. If you go an entire 8-hour flight, you will feel the dryness in your nostrils. You will feel
which most of all causes
on you.
Deep vein thrombosis, blood clots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to hydrate. Very, very important for air travel. Thank you,
and
Nancy.
And the problem is,
mm-hmm.
it would all be fine
mm.
if they didn't have half the time that you fasten seatbelts were in turbulence, and B, there's only a few bathrooms.
Right.
And, you know, it's like you want to get up.
Okay.
And, you know, I just saw
the... get online now. I'll have to go by the time
I saw the funniest comedy video of a guy. He has to go to the bathroom. And they say, I'm sorry, sir, that there's turbulence. You see,
you have to stay strapped in.
But I gotta go. So finally, the guy, he looks around furtively. And finally, he unfastens his seatbelts and he goes towards the bathroom. And immediately, the plane goes into like a nosedive, and he's like plastered to the seat. It's a comedy routine. I don't know how they do it with special effects.
He's plastered to the ceiling. Right.
So it's like, it's fine until you unbuckle your seatbelts, and then that's when the turbulence starts.
Or you're in
the bathroom, and all of a sudden it's like, you're upside down.
Now everything's up there.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. So.
Okay. Good point at which to pause, because we need to divide our podcast into two parts. So in part two, give us a preview of questions we're going to tackle.
Oh, I've been found to have a thyroid nodule on my left lobe.
I'm sorry to hear that, Lily.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Not me. That's a question.
That's a question. Okay. We will address that when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.